I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Floods and other disasters have plagued Kansas City over the years, but each time, ordinary and extraordinary people here have faced these problems and lifted our morale. This hour, we'll look at a collection of stories of some of Kansas City's significant moments and the role its residents, famous and not, played in rebuilding and advancing Kansas City. A little bit later, Brian McTavish gives us some great ideas to catch the Kansas City spirit. He's back with our weekend to-do list. That and a record-setting moment last night at the K on Up to Date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. It's called the Kansas City Spirit. We've seen it time and time again in times of crisis in this town, when floods ravaged sections of the city, or in 1900 when a fire destroyed the city's magnificent new convention hall. Joyce Hall, the founder of Hallmark Cards, was so moved by the Kansas City Spirit following the legendary 1951 flood that he commissioned artist Norman Rockwell to portray this aspect of our character in a painting, which has become part of the fabric of our town. A new book focuses on the Kansas City spirit and some people here whose lives over the years have exemplified that spirit. That book is called The Kansas City Spirit, Stories of Service Above Self, and we'll talk with two of the authors involved in the project in just a few minutes. And now the Kansas City Spirit with the authors of a new book on a topic. Bruce Matthews, the chief author here. Bruce, nice to have you again.
Good to be here.
And also here is one of the contributing authors, Christopher Leach. Christopher, nice to have you too.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
Will you talk about some defining moments, Bruce, in this city's history that gave rise to this idea of the Kansas City Spirit? And I'm wondering, to what extent is the Kansas City Spirit still with us today?
It's taken a hit over the last few years, I think, kind of because of the nationwide outbreak, the bad economy, and the everybody seems to want to know what's in it for me type attitude. And then, of course, the dysfunctional politics that swept the nation. Mm-hmm. So what we know as the Kansas City Spirit is still alive, and I think this is just a good time to be reacquainted to that spirit. Yeah.
What's the latest example the two of you have seen around town of the Kansas City Spirit? Anything come to mind?
Well, first of all, the book is about you only have to be deceased to be in the book. You don't have to be white or black or rich or poor, male, female. It's a broad range of people throughout Kansas City history. Contemporary Kansas Cityans, I can't think of a better one than one of the fellow co-authors, and that's Mamie Hughes.
Oh, boy. Great example.
Mamie, and then
Christopher, you're nodding your head as he said that.
Absolutely. I think Mamie's been exemplary of the Kansas City spirit since she first set foot on the stage, and I'm too much of a gentleman to say how many years ago that was. But she's been defining that spirit through her service for lo these many years. And I think that's the overarching theme here, and it is the subtitle of the book, Service Before Self. Mm-hmm. I think what we identify as Kansas City spirit is born out of that knowledge that we rely on others in order to get by in this life. And we have to help each other make progress. We have to help each those who are less fortunate and those who are immediately in need. And Mamie definitely is someone who has walked that walk.
And I'm lucky enough to say I just saw her yesterday.
Yeah. Well, good for you.
Then another one, of course, is the gentleman who wrote the foreword to the book, and it's Crosby Kempner III.
Yeah.
What he's done to turn our library system around.
Amazing.
It is truly amazing. And then, we can't forget the Helzbergs and the Halls and Julie Irene Kaufman. Some of these people.
Who will go down in history now, given the gift she's given our town with the Kaufman Performing Arts Center.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is the Kansas City spirit something unique to our town, Christopher, or do all cities have some piece of it, do you think?
I think that what Kansas City demonstrates is an exemplary achievement of a human quality, and that human quality is concern for others, compassion, the idea that service will get you just as much as grasping will. But I think in Kansas City, because of our particular place in the country and in the nation's history at this great crossroads of rivers and human pathways and economic development, we were able to demonstrate the best of those human qualities more frequently in greater quantity. And thus, I think we came to define this very natural human tendency.
You know, Bruce, you wrote something interesting in your introduction to this book, that the Kansas City spirit can be contagious. It can make this a better world.
It can.
How so?
I think the Kansas City spirit is also an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And that attitude is pride, and not a boastful or haughty pride, anything like that. It's a pride that comes for those who are pure in heart,
mm-hmm.
and they help other people. We usually think of coming together in times of adversity.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Joyce Hall, when he commissioned Norman Rockwell to do the painting, he defined it as that something in good men's hearts that enables them to place service above self to mm-hmm. accomplish the impossible.
Yeah.
And, of course, the building of the Hannibal Bridge, the first bridge across the Missouri River, is probably one of those defining moments. The
I was
initial
gonna say,
defining
you're,
moment.
You're taking my next question because
maybe
that was the most defining moment in a sense. July 3rd, 1869,
right.
40,000 people on the banks of the Missouri River. Octave Chanute and his team of engineers, divers, and builders just completed the construction of the first bridge to span the Missouri River. And this is a moment that really made Kansas City what it is today. Without that,
yeah.
we're not here today, probably.
Absolutely. The
yeah.
stockyards came into existence, and in Kansas City, one of the terms that I liked from the newspaper accounts of the day, once that was done, the headlines read, "We are marching on," and I think that's part of the Kansas City attitude.
Just why was that such a big deal? Because the backstory here about the intense competition to get the bridge, to be the first, was something else.
Well, yeah, there was strong competition between Leavenworth and some of the other cities nearby. And, yeah, you have to keep in mind, this was the first bridge to cross the Missouri River anywhere. So it was very important for all of Kansas Cityans to pull together. And it was the politicians, the business leaders, and the people who worked on the bridge.
Who had been struggling, frankly, since the founding of the city in 1850, official starting date of Kansas City, to try to get the railroads to pass nearby or through here, because railroads equaled commerce, equaled growth, equaled life in the day. And there are many, many stories of railroad companies that existed only on paper and dueling transportation magnates out of Boston and other East Coast cities who were determining the fate of the country by essentially, like the gods, moving pieces around on a map. And it took some cooperation and collaboration among many different interests here in Kansas City to sway the powers that were in Washington, D.C., to eventually draw that line through Kansas City and put that bridge over the river here. Every bit of commerce that happened in our ever westward expanding country from that point, 1869, still reeling and recovering from the Civil War, but every bit of business that happened west of here passed through this city in some way or another. It led to some great fortunes being developed, of course, but it also led to an even greater concentration and confluence of humankind in this place that really made this, as has been said many times earlier and later, the Paris of the Plains. This was a city like no other, and we really did owe it to the decades-long struggle of our city fathers and mothers to make sure that we got that railroad.
And we became the gateway to the West.
We are that. St. Louis be darned.
Yeah, absolutely. Arch, the heck with the arch, right, and everything else. Who coined the term Kansas City spirit? Is there someone we know who uttered that term first, or is that sort of lost to us?
It was in conjunction with the building the Hannibal Bridge, and I believe William Gillis first used that term. He owned the Gillis House Hotel on the banks of the river there and everything. There's many examples of the Kansas City spirit. Two of the guys that are in the book I refer to as being larger in life, larger than life. And I got to thinking about that. One of them was 6'3" and weighed 350 pounds.
Who was that?
That was Mayor Bartle, Pedro Bartle. The other one was 5 feet even, and I don't know if his weight even reached the triple digits, and that is, of course, Tony DiPardo.
Tony DiPardo, who you write about here. Yeah.
And then I got thinking, well, what about Buck? Buck was larger than life? Mamie wrote about him in the book. I thought, no, Buck was life itself. Buck was the type of person that all of us want to be like when we grow up.
Isn't that the truth? And I'm so glad I got to know him just a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Buck didn't have a mean or hateful bone in his body, yet he suffered through extremes of hatred and racial prejudice, but he never let it define who he was to become.
Let's go back to another moment that, again, sort of catches you up short because it's so magnificent in its own way, and that's April 4th, 1900. The city's magnificent new convention hall burns to the ground. The citizens of our town rebuilt it in just 90 days in time to host the Democratic National Convention that year. It's called the 90-Day Wonder as a result. Where was the original convention hall that burned to the ground? Where was it located?
Wasn't that on 10th Street?
It was very close to the latest convention hall was where Barney Ellis Plaza is right now. Right. And the first convention hall was just a block away.
So right still in the same area.
Same location.
Right, right near the public baths
that
were downtown as well.
Public baths, tell us about that.
During a period of time in the city's history when there wasn't such a thing as indoor plumbing in every residence and dwelling, and there were raging hygiene crises across the city at various periods during our history between 1850 and around 1920. There were outbreaks of typhus and diphtheria and cholera, and amazing palatial dwellings stood next door to hovels that were built in holes in the ground. And we have some really interesting photographic documentation of this in the city's history. One of the movements that cities adopted across the country were to establish public baths to encourage cleanliness and thus hygiene. And the baths in Kansas City, I think, had women's and men's sides, and they were rather large and occupied a whole city block downtown.
By the Barney Ellis Plaza today.
Right.
Yeah.
And were open to the public. I don't know what the hours were or if there was a fee, but it was one of the ways that city planners devised to try to circumvent the inevitable byproducts of so many people being crammed so quickly into a pretty well-defined amount of space that hadn't been designed to hold all those people and provide services and amenities to them.
So you wonder how public baths would go down today.
Well, I think we have them just in different forms, in schools, dormitories, and gymnasiums.
Well, I guess that's probably right, yeah. So again, April 4th, 1900, and the city came together to rebuild the convention hall. How did that happen so quickly,
Well,
Bruce?
The first convention hall was completed in 1899, and then in the afternoon of April the 4th.
How did it catch fire? Yeah.
It was of suspicious origin. That's the way the papers determined.
Somebody was mad, eh?
Again, it was all the city leaders, members of the Chamber of Commerce, and all the citizenry came together. And the thing that was important, it had already booked the Democratic National Convention to appear – to appear in on July the 4th, 1900. Mm. And the city came together, rebuilt it in 90 days.
Real quick.
And the Democratic Convention, William Jennings Bryan was nominated in that year, and they went
off without a hitch. William McKinley in 1900, yeah.
Well, I think it's important to recall that it was an easy thing for a structure to burn down very quickly, that people had spent months building because it was all stick and nail. It was a wooden structure. And whether it was mischief or not, it was a pretty easy thing to flick a cigarette or a cigar butt at a structure and just watch it consumed. That's one of the reasons there were so many lumber millionaires in Kansas City at the time, because that was our major method of construction for residences and smaller dwellings, was lumber, was wood. Surprisingly, when the convention hall was rebuilt and the conventioners got into town, no one could tell who hadn't been informed that it was this 90-day wonder, that it had been thrown together. It looked finished. It looked polished. And the convention took place without further disastrous incident, if you don't count the nomination of Mr.
Well, I should point out before a break here that Bruce Matthews and Christopher Leach, as well as others, Mamie Hughes and several others, will talk about their book, The Kansas City Spirit, Stories of Service Above Self, at 6:30 tonight at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the Central Branch downtown at 14 West 10th Street. You can RSVP by going to kclibrary.org or just show up. After a break, we'll talk about the flood of 1951 and the arrival of Norman Rockwell to take it all in. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our broadcast yesterday with three local chefs talking about how they handle their businesses, you can listen to that conversation online at kcur.org. This hour, we're visiting with a couple of authors about a new book, The Kansas City Spirit, Stories of Service Above Self, and how this city came together. We're visiting with Bruce Matthews, the principal author here, and Christopher Leach, who is a contributing author to this book, The Kansas City Spirit. Again, they speak tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Library, the Central Branch, downtown at 14 West 10th Street. Bruce, tell us about the Reverend David Bulkley.
Reverend Bulkley and
one of these key people in our town.
And his wife, Beulah, they started the City Union Mission. And what wonderful examples of the Kansas City Spirit they were. There were three houses down about around 3rd and Wyandotte.
We're talking about roughly what year here?
In the 19 teens, mm-hmm. in those years. And the three houses were Madame Lovejoy's and Eva Prince's, and then another home.
Madame Lovejoy.
Madame Lovejoy.
Sounds intriguing.
And it's an another one owned by Annie Chambers, Kansas City's infamous madam.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bulkleys purchased Madame Lovejoy's home, and they were helping ex-cons, drunks, derelicts get back on their feet. And actually, Annie Chambers lived to be 92, died in 1935. Hmm. And when a couple of years before she died, she became so enamored with the work that the Bulkleys were doing that she gave them her home.
So we flipped from sin to salvation pretty quickly there, it sounds
like. It's never too late for redemption is what I always say.
Well, and she was convinced to do this because sitting by an open window one day, almost spitefully in the face of the do-gooders next door, she heard a sermon being preached for the deceased child of one of the working women at the resorts. And she was so overwhelmed by the compassion of this family who would overlook, you know, sin and wrongdoing, to show compassion and caring to this troubled individual at a very difficult time, you, through the descriptions in the Bulkley's book, you can almost see her scratching her head and changing her consideration of them. It was a number of years before she really dedicated her estate to the work of the mission, but it was through an individual and his wife who were doing good with and avoiding fame at the same time, that her heart was transformed. And I think that's really illustrative of the Kansas City spirit, people who were pursuing the right path and hoping that others would be caught in their wake, but really weren't doing it for their own gain or their own fame.
It's a great story. Yeah.
An interesting contemporary story about Annie Chambers. She's buried in Elmwood Cemetery. Very obscure stone that just says Leanna Kearns. She married two Williams. She married a William Kearns and a William Chambers. And so if you come to the cemetery, you have no idea where to find Annie Chambers. Well, this Saturday at our fourth annual Elmwood Cemetery picnic, the Dan Doty, who runs the Kansas City Union Mission now, and his staff, they're going to unveil a new memorial marker to Annie Chambers, telling a little bit more about her story, which is an amazing story about how she helped the Bulkleys.
Oh, what a great story. And then there's the Berry sisters.
Dr. Alice Berry Graham and Dr. Catherine Berry Richardson. Alice was a dentist. Catherine was a physician. And they were female doctors in Kansas City back in the early 1920s. And these sisters started the Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City.
Wow.
It was not a good time to be a female doctor. They were ostracized by all the medical associations of the day. But their unselfishness, and of course, everybody knows the story of Children's Mercy today and what an asset it is to our community.
And I've got some personal experience with that hospital, so my heart goes out to it in a whole lot of ways. How did this book come together? Christopher, how did you get involved in it?
Well, when Bruce Matthews calls, you always pick up the phone.
You've learned that over the years.
I first met Bruce when I started at Kansas City Museum, and recognize him immediately as more than a lay historian. This is someone who's really committed to our city's history and the people who defined that history. And I have always relied on him as a reference resource for Kansas Cityans of yore because of his dedicated work at Elmwood Cemetery. And he's been very kind to the museum in his professional capacity as a photographer without equal, as far as I'm concerned. So when Bruce called and said, hey, I had this project, I said, sure, I'll participate in that. But then he very cagily let me know the deadline, which was
a little
really
tighter than you expected.
Right around the corner.
Yeah.
But what a great opportunity for our institution to be represented with some of my colleagues here. And what better person to follow down an interesting path than Bruce? So.
Yeah.
And I don't think there was anybody he contacted who said, I'm too busy. Because normally when Bruce is doing something, it's really interesting. He's already rounded up some support for it. And you know it's going to be very visible and good for your institution to be involved with that. So,
and the seed for this book came from where, Bruce Matthews?
Probably from the Elmwood Cemetery book. You had Crosby.
Such
Kemper
a beautiful book.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
Such a beautiful book.
A little bit more about some of the other authors, of course, Mamie Hughes, and Mamie Hughes is a legend in Kansas City. Andrew Kaplan wrote part of it. Andrew is works for Commerce Bank and is the current president of B'nai Yehuda. Carol Powers, who was also the editor on the book. And
a very good editor for the Kansas City Star once upon a time.
Yes. Yeah. And a lady by the name of Lynn Mackle. Lynn, I was first introduced to her. She curated and wrote the catalog on an exhibit up at the Albright Kemper Museum in St. Joe about the works of George Van Millet, who is an interesting – what a great artist he was in the early days of Kansas City. And I can't say enough about D.J. Matheny, who designed the book. And she really gave it the elegance and the dignity and respect a book such as this needs to have.
And Christopher, we got a great section in this book, Christopher, where you go through some of the forefathers and mothers of our town.
Right.
And one of them you talk about is François Chouteau, and I think others might pronounce Chouteau a different way.
Well, whenever I pronounce François Chouteau's name using the French pronunciation, most people who know Kansas City history look at me.
Like, who, what?
They wonder who I'm talking about.
We've Americanized it, haven't we?
Chouteau Trafficway is how most of us will know that name. What an interesting family.
And, absolutely.
I think we owe a real debt to this family for being such great letter writers, because we wouldn't know as much as we know about these very early days of the settling of the little camp here that eventually became Kansas City.
On the ledge on the river.
Right down in the East Bottoms.
Mm-hmm. You can go see that today, right? It's still there.
The rock ledge is there, and there's a wonderful marker that the Jackson County Historical Society put up at the site of the original town company, which is just a little bit west of where the rock ledge was. But you can still take a little trip down the river.
How do you get down there?
Oh, golly. I know you get to the marker going down Main Street past the ice company.
Right.
I believe that the stone ledge is east of Berkeley Riverfront Park.
East of the park. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you can find really interesting ruins of the early city down there. There's wonderful remains of an early church and the arched doorways that exist there. And there are foundations left from some of the early buildings. A lot of those first buildings from, say, 1822 to 1846 have been wiped away because they were all just stick frames sitting on the surface of the ground. Those were warehouses for fur trading with the Native American tribes and the other French voyageurs who occupied the river up to about what we know as Leavenworth now. But the Chouteaus, I think, were the great exemplars of what we would come to know as the Kansas City spirit. Here was the runt, second son, who wasn't succeeding in the business in St. Louis and who was sent down the river essentially to find his own way. And he came here with his brother and a colleague named Manuel Lisa, who led a very interesting life and was very highly regarded by the Native Americans, a Spaniard. So we have Latino influence in Kansas City from the very beginning.
Yeah.
But those Chouteaus were brave and courageous. They were businessmen, and they were interested in making a profit. But the whole family was engaged in the business, and they stuck it out through thick, thin, heat, cold, mosquito plagues, disease running rampant. Their warehouses being carried away by floodwaters periodically. But their letters are so engaging and so warm and so compassionate.
And you have those at the museum?
Those letters survive in several collections here. We have some of the Chouteau papers in the museum collection. There are some at Jackson County Historical, I believe, and Western Historical Manuscripts Collection has the town company papers from 1839 to 1849.
Have they been published anywhere?
The Chouteau letters have been published in a wonderful little book called Cher Oncle, Cher Papa, because François Chouteau referred to his father-in-law as his uncle, which was a very lovely gesture. But they were well known for their hospitality. They would take anyone in and give them shelter whenever it was needed. They helped many families and individuals through hard winters and tough times. And their letters are filled not with bemoaning their sad condition. There are a few, you know, whiny moments who... I think we do a disservice to expect them to be saintly, but they're also filled with wonder at the people they're meeting and the good they're doing and the business they're building. It's a really prescient beginning for a city that is now filled with examples of that kind of compassion and caring.
I love to hear Christopher talk. I always learn something new as well.
You are too.
And what we need to remember is, a lot of these early pioneers came here, and they didn't have a nickel in their pocket. Father Donnelly. It's just remarkable what they accomplished.
Well, I'd love to walk down to those early ruins sometime with you, Christopher, and you show it. I would love to see some of that. I guess I'm remiss in not having seen it by now.
Well, I think very soon you can expect to see published one of our community history tours from the museum that will take us on a walk down there with a couple of our neighbors up in the Scarrett Point neighborhood who know them well.
Oh, that sounds terrific.
Yeah.
You also talk about a name that means a lot in this town, Dr. Benoist Troost, who lived from 1786 to 1859, Christopher.
Dr. Troost is a really interesting story. He was the first resident physician in Kansas City. He was reputed to have served as a medical steward in Napoleon's army, and he was an accidental American. He was on a ship on a scientific exhibit with his brother, who was a geologist, and they were trapped by a storm at an eastern port in the United States. And I think while he was waiting for something better to come along, Dr. Troost set out on an adventure following the French language path through the United States, which generally would take you down to New Orleans. And that's where a lot of our early settlers really came from, was the French fur and, you know, other natural resources trade through New Orleans up to St. Louis along the Mississippi River. Troost is well connected to another early Kansas City in William Gillis, and together they opened what was first called the Troost Hotel, but was later taken over by Gillis and was known as the Gillis House Hotel. We're very lucky at the museum to have the Gillis House guest register, which was found behind a wall in some building that was being torn down downtown many, many years ago.
Wow.
And the names and origins of those early guests at that hotel tell a story of the history of Kansas City. There's George Armstrong Custer and a number of other well-known names. But also, you know, woman and child or man with slave, giving us a sideways look at the kind of people who were passing through our city on their way from one place to another for whatever personal or professional reason, and just fortuitously preserved because at the time, probably up until around 1850, nobody really expected this place to last. It had a number of goofy names like Possum Trot, and there were other better developed urban situations in the area like Leavenworth and St. Joe and Independence. And it really was touch and go for a long time before things really solidified around this idea. And it was people like Dr. Troost and Gillis and those other early developers here in the city who helped create that sense of critical mass, not just physically, but in terms of mood, would you say, Bruce, that this was a place worth staying in.
Bruce, let's do one more before y'all have to leave. And again, we're talking this morning about the Kansas City Spirit, Stories of Service Above Self, a new book that chronicles the history of this town through great deeds and fascinating people. One more person, Bruce, Bobby Joe Blue.
Bobby Joe
Blue. Who was Bobby Joe Blue? Great picture of him in the book, by the way.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
He was born in 1936 and died in 2003. And one of the things that I learned in putting the book together is when any of the, for as many Native American tribes as there are in Kansas City, there are that many cultures and customs which are unique to their own.
Right.
So when some of the Indians would arrive on their own in Kansas City, their society was kind of fractured. And what Bobby Joe Blue did was he brought all these tribes together. He established the Kansas City Indian Center to help the Indians coming to Kansas City to help each other.
Yeah. Fascinating guy.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this book is available, and again, the two of you and others, and Mamie Hughes and others, will be speaking tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the Central Branch, 14 West 10th Street, downtown. To RSVP, go to kclibrary.org. Again, the title of the book, The Kansas City Spirit, Stories of Service Above Self. I sure enjoyed having you both.
Thank you.
Steve, it's been our honor. Thank you.
Christopher Leach, always a pleasure, guys.
Thanks.
You bet.